Hello, space junkies, and welcome to What a Piece of Junk, the Star Wars podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. I am your erudite host, Scott Bottman, and joining me for this episode is my original Wookiee co-pilot, our very own Dave Filoni, Mr. Miracle himself, the man of a thousand nicknames. It's Nathan Miracle. Nathan, how's it going out there?
It is going, well, not so great. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see this. If you're listening on the podcast, please know my headphones broke moments before we started recording. So I am sitting here holding up one half of my headphones up to
You're doing your very best impersonation of Dr. Johnny Fever or Nessman from WKRP, or maybe even the, radio broadcasters of old, where they would hold up the side of their monitor, as it were, before headphones were even a thing, and speak breathlessly with anticipation into some microphone hovering in front of their face.
Yeah, well, I'll just have to keep that in mind as we do this today and get some new headphones before next time, because this is not the best way to do it. But you know what? It's never a bad day to talk about Star Wars, so I'm just going to focus on that instead.
Excellent, excellent. And we're going to jump right into it this week. Sadly, Derek cannot be with us here aboard the Drunken Gungan, but hopefully he will be back for our next episode. Longtime listeners and longtime Star Wars fans will know that Nathan and I had a really great time at Star Wars Celebration Chicago some years ago. But sadly, the pandemic and a variety of other factors have made it to where Star Wars Celebration Chicago back in 2019 is actually the most recent Star Wars Celebration convention that we've had, Nathan. But that all changes next month when several bajillion Star Wars fans, along with friend of the show Terry Roberts Lee, will make their way to Anaheim for Star Wars Celebration 2022. I'm really excited.
It's crazy to think that that's the most recent one was Chicago. Mm-hmm. Somehow that feels like only yesterday, and also 20 years ago.
It feels like it was a whole other lifetime for me. I mean, we had so much fun. Sadly, Nathan and I won't get to go, but Terry's going to go, and not only is she going to be on the show sometime when she returns to give us her own little rundown about how things went, but she's taking some really cool magnets of our What a Piece of Junk logo that she's going to be handing out at various podcast gatherings there at Star Wars Celebration. So if you are listening to this episode and you're going to be at Celebration, seek out the podcast gatherings, and Terry will be glad to give you a magnet that has our epic What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast FPN magnet logo. I thought about getting her to make some of those collectible pins that are all the rage, but that turned out to be more expensive than the magnets, believe it or not.
Hmm. Yeah, I remember centuries ago when I was in high school, I was in a program called Odyssey of the Mind, and we went to the world championship for that. And every team, there was a team or two teams from every state, and every team had their own pins, and it was a big deal to trade them around. That's not a recent phenomenon, but it's still going strong.
Yeah, well, the Star Wars versions of the Disney collectible pins have picked up speed. Well, I guess recent is probably not even the right word for this, but obviously after Lucasfilm was acquired by Disney, Disney collector pin trading stuff with a Star Wars flavor became huge. So, yes. Yeah. Well, anyway, speaking of Disney and Lucasfilm being acquired by them, we do have a teeny tiny little bit of Star Wars news to share with you before we jump into the meat and potatoes of this episode, which the meat and potatoes of this episode are two topics that are near and dear to mine and Nathan's hearts, and that is Star Wars video games and the Star Wars customizable card game. We've got no Star Wars series active on Disney Plus right now, nor any particular movies looming in the future to discuss, so we're going to take some time to talk about some ancillary Star Wars topics tonight, and for us, that's going to be two types of gaming. So there you have it. But for Star Wars news, speaking of streaming series on Disney Plus from the galaxy far, far away, we got a rumor that the trailer for Star Wars Andor, the series based on Cassian Andor and his adventures prior to Star Wars Rogue One, is going to premiere at Star Wars Celebration in Anaheim. Nathan, the major fuel for this rumor that the trailer is actually going to make its world premiere at Celebration is that Adria Adjorna confirmed that she will attend the convention. And, of course, Adria is going to be in the series, in the Andor series. I am not entirely clear who she plays in the Andor series. I think it might be a new character because obviously the story will be something prior to Rogue One since, spoiler alert, Cassian and everybody else dies in Rogue One, a Star Wars story. I know.
I was waiting to watch that. No, I wasn't. yes, I'm very excited to see that trailer. I'm sure it's coming out at Celebration. Celebration loves to do, or Disney loves to do releases like this at Celebration. I remember when we were at Celebration and found out that Palpatine was going to return with Ian McDiarmid's iconic laugh at the end of the Rise of Skywalker trailer. So yeah, I'm not surprised at all that they are having a trailer there. And of course we'll be here to talk about it once we see that trailer.
Yeah. The news that Adria Adjorna is, or Arjona, I'm probably pronouncing her last name incorrectly. My apologies. The news that she was going to Star Wars Celebration actually came out when she was doing press tours for her role in the recent Morbius film opposite Jared Leto. And she said in an interview with one of the press release folks that how much she loves Star Wars. She's so excited about getting to be in a Star Wars production that she has already gotten herself a Star Wars tattoo. And she says, here is the quote. "I love it. I was about to get the name of my character tattooed, but as I told director Tony Gilroy that, he was like, please don't do that. You're going to reveal to everyone what your character's name is." And I was like, oh, right, true. I cannot do that. So
that confirms your suspicion that she's going to be an entirely new character.
Yeah.
Or so perhaps she is a new version of an existing character, and they just don't want us to know that she's actually Princess Leia or who. Yeah, I don't think that one's likely, but I couldn't think of who else she might be playing.
Although it's conceivable, based on the time frame and also her overall look, she could be a Dr. Aphra.
Dr. Aphra, or if she doesn't mind makeup, Hera.
Oh, yeah, that'd be cool. Well, anyway, whoever Adjorna is playing, we will find out hopefully next month at Star Wars Celebration when we get to see the trailer for Andor. And probably whoever she is playing, along with the rest of the cast of Andor, she'll become available as downloadable content for the video game that we are going to be talking about, because every Star Wars character you could possibly imagine, and some you can't, is available in some way to be unlocked in Star Wars Lego, The Skywalker Saga. Nathan, I have been waiting for this game for freaking ever. And I know you have too. But we both have picked it up pretty much on the day of release. And both of us are playing on our various Nintendo Switch consoles. Nathan, what are your overall thoughts so far about The Skywalker Saga? Was it worth the wait?
Oh, definitely. So I ended up picking up a physical copy. My intention was originally to get a download copy, but I experienced some Joy-Con drift and needed to get a new Joy-Con. Plus, I was running out of memory, so I need a new memory card for the Switch anyway.
Yeah, for real.
So I thought, I'm just going to go into GameStop and get those, and then later today I'll download the Skywalker Saga. It'll be fine. As I walked into GameStop, I was wearing my Grogu hat and a Star Wars shirt because I don't just wear those for the podcast. I wear them
because that's standard operating procedure. Yes, right.
Exactly. And the lady at the GameStop was dressed as Anakin, and when she saw me walk in, said, "Hey, we've got Star Wars Lego Skywalker Saga." Just immediately.
And you're like, well, how can I say no to a girl cosplaying as Anakin?
Exactly. My first thought was, how did she know that I would... Oh, right. Yes. She looked at me. That's how she knew that I would be interested in Star Wars. Yeah. We talked a little bit about Star Wars and who our favorite characters were and all of that. But Yep. Then once I got the game, started playing it immediately. And it's a lot of fun. I will say it's not quite as fun as some previous installments of the game for me personally. Yeah. I'm not quite sure I can put a finger on the reason why. I feel like there's a little bit less whimsy in it than there have been in some of the past versions of the game. And what really struck me is I got to A New Hope. I've been playing through 1 through 9 is the goal, but I'm in A New Hope right now. And I got to a particular part where I opened a door and there was a stormtrooper who was taking a shower. There was a ton of that sort of thing in the original with the original 3 movies.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, I didn't see all that much of this sort of thing in episodes 1 through 3. And I felt like that was kind of missing.
I think they got a little more serious about it because there's been so many Star Wars Lego games now that it almost has its own continuity and ecosystem. So like more than just putting Lego versions of Star Wars famous scenes together with some gags in between, they're trying to almost create their own little thing. I mean, nowadays they have the Freemaker Adventures, all those Star Wars Lego specials on Disney Plus. And you know, I don't even know how many Star Wars Lego games there are, but you're right. There isn't as much of a feeling of whimsy or comedy as there once was. I think part of that is because the space for Star Wars jokes and Star Wars satire is so full nowadays. Whereas when the original Star Wars Lego game came out, it was basically that and a little bit of Robot Chicken doing their thing for Star Wars spoofs. And there weren't that many others. How many of the Star Wars Lego games have you played?
I've played the original, and then I've also played the episode 1 through 3 version. I'm forgetting exactly how they titled that one.
I think that one was called the prequels. I think it was called the prequel. It might have just been episode 1 through 3. You know what I should do? While you reminisce about the games, I'm going to go look at their Wikipedia page and figure out just how many there have been and when that started, because dang.
Yeah, it's been a while. But I will say, this is not just, hey, we took the levels from those episodes and recreated them, or even just took them wholesale and made a new game, just patching them together. These are entirely new levels. I don't recognize all of these levels.
The photorealistic elements, as it were, for the Skywalker Saga levels seem a little more intense than the photorealistic parts of the older games. There are less Lego bricks and items around, in my perspective.
Yeah, and most of the Lego bricks and items that are around are there to be destroyed. That's actually been a thing since the start. There are some that are special that certain characters can interact with, but most of them are there to give you studs when you destroy them. And I've been finding every once in a while I'll start going off the beaten path to explore different areas. And while I'm playing through the story version, that's not a great idea, because invariably I'll end up somewhere where I'm like, okay, there's clearly a secret right here, but I need to be a resistant agent to get in.
Or Anakin Skywalker as a little kid or whatever.
Yeah, I need to have force powers to get into this one. But right now I've got Jar Jar Binks and Captain Panaka or whatever.
The first Lego Star Wars game was just called Lego Star Wars the Video Game. It came out in March of 2005, and that one was the adaptation of the prequels. It had The Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, and Revenge of the Sith, and in the original game, there was a bonus level that was A New Hope.
Okay, well, later they must have come out with one that was either 1 through 6 or 4 through 6.
Yeah, so let me see if I can find this here. I probably should have done all this research ahead of time, but you know what? Meh. Anyway, but definitely they have done plenty of remixes and combo versions. And there was a Star Wars Lego The Force Awakens game that Mita and I played back when we had the Nintendo Wii U.
Yes, and that one I did skip. So this will be my first time playing any of the sequel trilogy on Lego.
Okay, all right.
So that should be fun.
Find the timeline here.
My favorite joke so far, and there have been some really good ones. I know a lot of people love the Taken reference when you get Qui-Gon Jinn. He talks about having a particular set of skills. But my favorite one is a little more subtle than that. In A New Hope, there's one point where they turn off all the turbo lifts, which is not from the movies. It's just something added so they could have that as part of the level. But when you get them turned back on, one of the stormtroopers runs to the turbo lift and says, "Ah, I need to get to the canteen. I hope I get there while they still have trays."
"I could kill you with this tray." Sorry. Yes.
Yeah. So, yes. For those who don't know, Eddie Izzard is a comedian who has a whole bit about the Star Wars canteen on the Death Star and how, you know, they had to have a canteen there. There's so many people they have to eat. And he did this whole skit about Darth Vader walking into the canteen and the guy behind the counter just not recognizing him at all. And it's like, where are the trays? I need a tray to put the we don't have any trays. Are you saying that you're not going to give Darth Vader a tray? I could kill you with a tray. It's a great little skit there. Please go find Eddie Izzard doing it because he does a way better job of it than I did. But
that's amazing. That
skit was just, if you didn't know what it was talking about, it's still kind of funny. Ooh, I hope I get there before they run out of trays. But if you do know what's up, even better.
Indubitably. So there are 6 official Star Wars Lego games. Lego Star Wars the video game in 2005 was the first. Then Lego Star Wars 2, the original trilogy in 2006. No word about what 3 movies that focused on. And then, how sweet and naive we were. In 2007, they came out with Lego Star Wars the Complete Saga. Ha, ha, ha. In 2011, there was Lego Star Wars 3, the Clone Wars. I'm not sure I played that game. Nathan, we ought to track that down.
I don't know about that one at all. Yeah, okay. Write that down.
Yeah, and then in 2016, we had Lego Star Wars The Force Awakens. And, of course, this month we've got Lego Star Wars The Skywalker Saga. And I have played Lego Star Wars games on 5 different consoles. I played on the Nintendo DS. I played on the Nintendo Wii, the Nintendo Wii U, the Nintendo Switch now, and prior to that, I also played on PlayStation 3, I should say.
Yeah, I never played a PlayStation version. Mine have all been Nintendo, but that's primarily because I had Nintendo consoles. The only non-Nintendo console I've had was a PS1.
I guess technically I have played it. I used to play it on my Generation 1 iPad because it was actually available on the Apple Store. Or the App Store, sorry. I've played 6 different versions of Star Wars Lego. I will say that in my opinion, the one I had the most fun with and the one that Mita and I enjoyed the most, because this is the one video game series, Lego video games that is, that Mita loves playing with me, is the, I want to say it was the original trilogy one that we played. It was the Complete Saga, the 1-6. In 2007, we got it for the Nintendo Wii. And the fun thing about the Wii version of that was the graphics had not become so advanced yet with their photorealism that it could process it. I'm getting my games mixed up. This was, it was the one on the Wii U. We were able to play where one person could play on the little handheld screen and the other player could play on the television. So that must have been The Force Awakens, or maybe I'm thinking of a different Lego game. In any event, we enjoyed the fact that we could split our screens like that and work together to solve the puzzles, her with it in her hands and me with the big screen.
And there have been several puzzles that I've done in this version where it would have been helpful if I had a second person on a different screen doing some other piece of the puzzle while I'm over here doing this piece. It is nice that the artificial intelligence will not kill the character that you are not.
Right. Yes. Because in past LEGO games, that has happened.
Yeah. Or they don't penalize you if they die. So there have been times when I've been all, I've got four characters. You three stay here in this nest of Gundarks and get beaten up while I go over there and mess with this little tiny thing that I think might get me to some hidden brick.
Yeah, yeah. Now, one of the things that we used to always love about the LEGO games in general was when you did the split screen, but then in past versions of the game engine, when the two players would get close enough to each other, the screen would merge and you'd just be both on the same screen. Here in LEGO Skywalker Saga, they're never merged if you're doing two-player. It's always a split screen right down the middle. So
that is
sometimes it gets a little confusing, but we've pretty much gotten used to it. But we have not been able to get as far along in the game as you have, Nathan, partly because we've been a little busy, but also my version of the game on the Nintendo Switch has had lots of glitch problems. I'm hoping that there's a patch or something soon. We did, of course, a day one patch, but I'm hoping there's a patch soon that helps fix this. It took us 3 hours to get off of the first level in the Phantom Menace, because every time we got to the scene where you, after the Deoxys comes and the Jedi leave and you fight your way back to the hangar to see your ship has been blown up by the droids, it would crash as soon as we tried to walk through the door to the docking bay. And of course we're trying to get the true Jedi rating and find all the hidden stuff like you do.
So I can do free play.
We were grinding our way through the first level. I think we did it three times and it crashed all three times. And like, okay, here's what we're gonna do. Because I looked online and some people had some complaints, but nobody mentioned this specific thing. So what we did was I dropped out as Obi-Wan and let Mita do the level as Qui-Gon. When we did it single player, just like on your copy of the for Nintendo Switch, everything worked fine. So it's some sort of problem with trying to have two players and all that fire animation in the docking bay, I think.
That makes sense. Yeah. I've been doing everything single player, so I haven't had any bug issues. I've seen reports of bug issues, but I haven't had any myself. It did take me a good long time to finish the Gungan section of episode one, but that's because I found a side quest in Uta Gunga and could not figure out where the side quest was trying to lead me. And
was it the one where you have to open all these locks for this central chamber to get to a Kyber crystal block?
I don't know. I never finished it. I got lost so many times. I eventually said, forget it. I'm just like leaving this thing. But it was appearing alongside the main, go this way to continue the story. And occasionally covering that up. So I was getting turned around and lost and me to like the very middle of the place, and I went there. It was bad. Not a fan of underwater cities in general. So that one took me a good long while. And after that, I decided, you know what? I'm not going to do too much of this side quest stuff until I've got the free play and I know I can complete stuff and I don't care how long it takes me. And honestly, I wanted to move on to some of the other movies. Episode one, not my favorite. Not my least favorite, but not my favorite.
So Mita and I have made it all the way to the Naboo courtyard. So we finished Uta Gunga, we got the bongo, and we did the submarine chase with the Kolo Clawfish and all that stuff. And then we got to the Naboo courtyard, and we've done a few of the side missions in there. And now we're getting ready to – we did make it to Tatooine. We got the Queen Starship and we flew to Tatooine.
Now, an interesting point about the Naboo courtyard there is you'll actually return there several times. As you return there throughout the course of the trilogy, you do return to that same kind of overworld area. And this happened more on Coruscant than on Naboo. But there were plenty of times when you go back to the Coruscant area with all the taxis to the more specific Coruscant areas.
Right. Okay.
And some of the side quests are in that area, and it's intended that you you know, go back there, not as part of a playthrough necessarily, but just free play, and be other types of characters. You know, there might be
cool
imperial thing over here that you can't get to until you've done, you know, some of the original trilogy or what have you.
I got a little confused in Otogunga when there was a terminal that had the rebellion symbol floating above it, the starbird, the phoenix. Because it turns out that's not a rebellion symbol per se. It just means you need a hero character to interact with this computer. And in this case, it had to be Jar Jar Binks. Didn't exactly pop to the front of my mind as a hero character. But yes, you have to be Jar Jar to stand in front of that computer. Did I just blow your mind with the you couldn't figure out the puzzle?
I could not figure that part out. I thought that was a rebel symbol as well.
Yeah, it's definitely the rebel symbol. But when you look at the list of characters in this game, Jar Jar is a, quote, hero class, not a Jedi or a Sith or an Imperial or a blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And so he's in that list along with people like Poe Dameron, Lando Calrissian, and Captain Panaka.
Now, one cool thing about that setup, though, when you get back to the original trilogy, I've gotten Han and Luke and Leia to wear stormtrooper armor. Like, I defeat a stormtrooper and armor shows up, and
that's great.
A hero can grab the armor, and if you get all three pieces, the helmet and the chest piece and the legs, you get to act as though you were a villain.
That's cool.
So there
were 422, why aren't you at your post?
Exactly. There were some villain terminals that I could only get to when I was wearing the stormtrooper outfit, which, of course, later on the Death Star, you automatically have some of that. My rescue of Princess Leia had a bit more blaster fire than
was
necessary. Yeah, yeah. And you could sneak in. I'm pretty sure there was a secret thing where, you know, you like one of the side, not side quests, but secret objectives is, you know, don't shoot anybody. I shot the first person I saw, which of course made the rest of the Death Star come attack me.
It
was fun. Was it? No, but it was fun.
Good times. I'm looking forward to doing that and trying to do it both ways, sneaky way and, you know, great. Now the whole place knows we're here.
Yeah. I've been having a lot more fun with the A New Hope stuff than any of the prequel stuff. And honestly, that's probably at least in part because I enjoy the original trilogy more than the prequels.
For sure.
They weren't my original Star Wars.
Exactly. Well, we have some questions about the game, although we've covered most of them, but I will go with what have you enjoyed the most so far as a question?
Clearly, going and getting a tray at the Star Wars canteen is the highlight so far. I also really enjoyed the Kashyyyk level, which there again, I love Wookiees.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I did a lot of exploring on Kashyyyk, not because I thought I was going to get true Jedi or anything, although I think I may have on that one because I did a lot of exploring there. It was just cool to run around the Wookiee homeworld. And quite frankly, didn't care about, you know, completing the normal quest line. Just ran around as Tarful and Yoda.
That's awesome. I haven't played very much. I think we're like 2% complete. But the thing I've enjoyed so far is that they added another layer to it where if you have a protocol droid like C-3PO with you, you can understand alien languages. And if you don't have a protocol droid with you, some of the characters you talk to, their subtitles are all like weird alien script that you can't read. For example, there's a whole subplot of talking to the Wandering Wookiee at various ports throughout the whole game. And we found the Wandering Wookiee. He's got like a purple mark over his head in Otogunga. And I was like, oh, hey, it's the Wandering Wookiee. So I walked over to him to talk to him, and he only speaks Shirawook. And my character at the time, Obi-Wan Kenobi, did not speak Shirawook. And I couldn't even read what the subtitles said because it was written in Shirawook.
Yeah, see, now, Obi-Wan doesn't understand Shirawook. But when I played that, what he was saying was, you need someone who understands Shirawook. And I tried to explain to the game that I do. But... since it's a computer, you know, it's a Nintendo Switch, it didn't understand me.
Han Solo feels your pain because he can speak Shirawook, but not everybody can understand his version of Shirawook.
Yeah.
That's really good. But I like the idea as a languages and writer guy. I love this idea that you have to have a translator because, as I often point out to people who like to compare Star Wars to Star Trek, well, the thing about Star Trek is we have universal translators, and over in Star Wars, we don't. But they usually gloss over it because 3PO or somebody is there. It was nice for me to see in The Rise of Skywalker, actually. There was a whole thing where they couldn't read the Sith inscription because nobody knows how to read that language. So it's pretty cool. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So one more question, and then we'll bop on over to some Star Wars CCG discussion. But what have you not liked so far about the game? It's easy for me. I'll go first here because the thing I didn't like so far is the glitches, because we had problems. So I'm glad to see that you have not experienced the glitches.
Yeah, but I'd have to say that the thing I don't like the most so far is kind of my own fault, because I am playing on the pad, not on the television screen.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily notice it when I'm playing, but after I've been playing for a little while and then I look up, everything is crossways and
yeah.
A little while after that. So I'm definitely going to be trying that on the big screen instead of the small screen for a little while. Not that I don't enjoy the portability of the small screen, but it hurts.
Yes. And speaking of hurting, we don't want your hand to go numb since you're having to hold your headphones. So we're going to move right along in this episode, but we will take a real quick break to let Kevin tell us about some of the other shows here on the Fandom Podcast Network.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to continue to feed your ears by inviting you to listen to these other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, discussing the latest in entertainment pop culture. Blood of Kings, Immortals Take Notice, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theaters, where we celebrate our favorite movies. Time Warp, the Fandom Flashback podcast discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie and TV pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation, our Star Trek and Orville show. Hair Metal, the 80s and early 90s rock metal podcast. Type 40, our show covering the time-traveling Doctor Who universe with host Dan Hadley. Lethal Mullet, an 80s and 90s action film podcast with host Adam P. O'Brien. Also check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast with hosts Scott, Derek, and Nathan. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, a deep dive into the final frontier with hosts Mark Newbold and Adam P. O'Brien. And check out our newest shows, The Fandom Show, our monthly Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube exclusive show about the month's hottest topics in fandom, and the FPN True Believers MCU podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the related Marvel television and streaming MCU universe, including the connections to the original Marvel comics. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on several platforms. Please subscribe to the Fandom Podcast Network YouTube channel to receive notifications of new podcast episodes and live events. You can enjoy all of the Fandom Podcast Network audio podcasts on our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The Fandom Podcast Network is on all major podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and iTunes. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can also find the Fandom Podcast Network on Instagram at Fandom Podcast Network and on Twitter at FanPod Network. Thank you for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Kevin, for keeping us up to date on all the different podcasts here on the FPN. And now we're going to jump into a topic that is near and dear to Kevin's heart as well, because he used to help produce this game. Longtime listeners will know that Nathan and I are big card game fans. Honestly, we're big gaming fans in general, but card games are typically the thing we do our most play with, and it's actually the way that Nathan and I met, through the old Star Trek card game and then some Lord of the Rings card game. And we've never actually played the Star Wars CCG, although it was produced by the same company as those others two, competitively much, but we have played it off and on just, you know, for the heck of it over the years. Now, I did Star Wars tournaments back in the day, in the 1990s, but Nathan was too young and or too far away from various gaming gatherings to do that, but he did play a lot of the card game in some cases quite badly, with his own collections of cards.
Now, I do have to correct you on one point there. It wasn't just in some cases. I was quite bad at the game. It came out when I was in middle school. All of us were bad at the game.
Yeah, yeah. And recently, though, we have hooked up with the Star Wars Customizable Card Game Players Committee, or the SWCCGPC, here in the Charlotte area, and our Star Trek gaming group that for a little while was a Star Wars Destiny gaming group has put Star Trek on the back burner for a bit and started paying more attention to the current state of the Star Wars Customizable Card Game, because just like our beloved Star Trek card game, a group of fans have kept the game going, in this case, for way longer than it was ever commercially produced by Decipher Incorporated, the aforementioned company that Kevin used to work for. And in fact, the Players Committee for the Star Wars CCG is just a little bit more legitimate than the one that we have for Star Trek, in that they have a written agreement with Lucasfilm and have had one since about 2002 when they started making their own virtual cards for the game. So when we make new Star Trek cards, we make the entire card, and you can print it out, cut it up, put it in front of an old card in a card sleeve, and add it to your tournament deck. When they make their virtual cards, for the most part, they don't make very much more than just new game text. Sometimes they do alternate images, or they'll do an entirely new card, except for the very top of the card, the black or white border area, because their agreement with Lucasfilm, and I'm summarizing here, so you know, if you're on the PC, don't at me with a bunch of hate that I'm not being legal enough. Their agreement is basically that they cannot reproduce any copyrighted stuff from Lucasfilm. So they cannot use images from the films or TV shows. They can't write new stories that reference things like Stormtroopers or Tusken Raiders. But they can use cosplayers or fan-created tribute art of certain things. So while the original card game produced by Decipher didn't make any cards for anything past Episode 1 when Decipher lost the Star Wars license, the Players Committee has made cards based on stuff from Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith, and everything that else that has come out. So there's Clone Wars cards, there's Star Wars Rebels cards, there's cards from the sequel trilogy, and so on and so forth. In fact, Nathan, as we record this episode of What a Piece of Junk, there is a new virtual set 18 getting ready to come out from the Players Committee, and they even had a Twitch live stream today to show some spoilers or previews of cards from Virtual Set 18. Anyway, I said all that to say this. We have started gathering with other players again in the area, and it's been a really good turnout. Our casual play day back in March had 12 players, and at one point we had, I think, 6 or maybe even 7 games going where somebody was, you know, playing two hands. And so that was a pretty good amount of Star Wars card game to be played here in the Charlotte area simultaneously in person. There's plenty of online play because it has its own specialized engine that you can play through any web browser. But playing in person has been rare even prior to the pandemic. Nathan, you were at the casual play day and two other gatherings since then. How do you think it's going?
I think it's going great. So as you mentioned, I started playing this game back in middle school. And we tried to play at lunch in our, I don't remember how many minute lunches, not enough minutes for a full game. And my friends and I really had no idea what we were doing. At one point in time, one of my friends thought that I was tracking where a certain card was in my deck, which is totally legal and part of the game, but requested that I shuffle my deck to stop me from tracking. And I wasn't even doing it. I just happened to keep getting the same card as Destiny. So in this game, every card has a little number, except locations, but those are assumed to be 0, that tells you kind of what happens when random chance or the force, the will of the force, would take over. So if you're shooting a weapon or something like that, generally you want to flip over a high number. And I just kept flipping over this TIE fighter that was Destiny 3, which isn't even that high of a number. Because it was the same card several times in a row, my friends were like, hey, you're counting and seeing how many cards it is until that card.
Yeah.
If I were cheating, I could do it so much better than that. because I was in middle school and wouldn't have figured out how to do it. So we weren't all that good. And then beyond middle school, you know, I kept buying new stuff and building my own decks and playing them against each other. But it was very rare that I got to play against another live human being. So for me, this was almost a new experience, getting to take one of my decks and playing against an actual person, making their own decisions. And, you know, I can pretend not to know what's in my opponent's hand as much as I want to pretend to, but sometimes, it's hard to totally separate your mind like that. It helps, but I can't always do it. It was great to get to play against some other people. And honestly, it was great to get to play with some of the new cards.
Yes. Yeah, I've really enjoyed the work that the Players Committee has done on the rules and the spirit and the idea behind a lot of their virtual cards. The Decipher crew was never shy about putting Easter eggs or in-jokes in their cards, and the Players Committee has taken that to the next level when they choose which card that a new virtual card should be pasted or slid on top of. For example, there's a new version of Darth Sidious, and he has a cool artwork from a Star Wars artist online. But the card that you're supposed to put him over is the dark side version of the Galactic Senate. Now, it took me a little while to realize, why is this? Oh, because he says,
I am the Senate.
So nice little Easter eggs like that are just really icing on the cake for the group that we have found here locally. And I'm proud to say that I've gotten at least three people to play this game for the very first time. Excuse me, four people to play this game for the very first time, even though it has been, quote unquote, out of print since 2002, or basically the end of 2001. Yeah. Shout out to Terry Lee, who has jumped into this game with both feet and ordered cards on the internet and has them now and is building her own decks. Good job, Terry. Of course, Big Mike, who probably will never hear this podcast because he's all, what's a podcast? Will Moody, who is a part of our Star Trek group, and Moody has played this game for the first time now and has really enjoyed it. And Drew Curry, who has been one of our Star Wars Destiny players and also plays Warhammer 40,000 with me. He jumped in last Thursday and had a great time, and he too has now gone onto ye old eBay and ordered some cards. So I'm excited to see what decks Drew comes up with, because he has a keen mind for gaming and Star Wars stuff in general. So Nathan, our next question to talk about this topic is, how are you adjusting to getting back into the game? You just sort of talked about how for you it's really a breath of fresh air to play against other humans in person. So I guess getting back into the game was a very small adjustment for you, because you hadn't played that much in general. Well, right?
In a way, it's a small adjustment. In a way, it's a huge adjustment, because I'm used to playing against myself, and my decks were about as good as my other decks. So dark side won about half the time, light side won about half the time, and I thought everything was great. No, not so much. I was actually really terrible at the game. And once I played against some other people, notably you, you just trounced me the first few times.
Yes.
I don't really know what I'm doing. Oddly enough, I was pretty good at the Wars game that Decipher made. When Decipher lost the license for Star Wars, they made something with a similar game engine, but with their own property instead of Star Wars. And there's enough differences, and I was enough older and understood things more that I caught on to that game fairly quickly in a way that I had not caught on to the Star Wars game. So one of the things that I've done to help me with the adjustment is the Star Wars CCG Players Committee website has event deck lists. And I went out and found a couple of deck lists and went to GIMP, the online system for playing, and did pretty much the same thing that I did as a kid. I started two accounts on GIMP, Phil Cloney and Phil Cloney 2.
You cloned yourself on GIMP? No way.
I cloned the clone. I mean, nothing. Typed in this one deck list over here and this other deck list over here, played them against each other, and realized, oh, that's why they're using this card or this card or this card. Oh man, there's a lot fewer characters in this deck than I usually have. That's probably because they have such low destiny. Now I'm drawing way better destiny. So I've started building some of my own decks, but keeping in mind some of the things I've learned from net decking, from seeing what other people have played.
I love that you use the term net decking. That is a very much old 1990s turn of the century term for card games. Nowadays, copying decks from other players that are available sometimes on the company's website is so commonplace, it doesn't really even have its own term anymore. But we used to totally run down and insult people who were net decking because they weren't original enough to come up with their own plans. Never mind the fact that nowadays nobody bothers to do that. They just wait and see what the good players are playing and they chase that meta game, as it were. For me, getting back into it has meant learning all kinds of new things about the virtual cards, because the environment in which people play has all sorts of new abilities and game text than what was popular when I stopped playing back around 1999. And so I think for me, the most fascinating things have been to see the prevalence of cards that have little icons inserted into the game text to shorten up the lines of type that you need to put into the text box of the cards. There's a downward facing triangle that means that you can deploy things directly from your reserve deck, which is so great. And then an upward facing triangle that means you can look through your reserve deck and take that card with the title next to the upward triangle and put it into your hand. And then there are S's and A's with the slash mark through them to show that something is immune to the card called Sense or immune to the card called Alter, which are two Jedi or Force powers that were prevalent in the early days of the game that were just way out of control. It made it to where whoever got their Obi-Wan or their Darth Vader out first basically was going to win the game, to say nothing of what happened when Luke Skywalker, Jedi Knight, or Emperor Palpatine became available as characters in the game. The original game released expansion sets.
Alter Wars.
Yes, exactly. And so cards that were really powerful but could have been canceled by Sense or Alter used to have to put the whole sentence immune to Sense or immune to Alter. And this new slash mark icon is just shorthand for that, which is great. But there was one other major development in the game that I didn't actually know about or had sort of seen near the end of the game's lifecycle when the Reflections 3 set came out, that Decipher created starting effects and defensive shields, which were cards. Defensive shields were a card type, a new card type, that could prevent some of the most broken or abusive strategies in the game that made the game just not fun for one of the players. They just have to sit there and watch their opponent win the game, you know, and nobody wants that. You want an interesting experience so that people will keep coming back and playing in the game. Defensive shields are fairly rare to come across these days, though, because the Reflections 3 set was, I believe, the very last set produced. I could be wrong about that, but near the end of the game's life cycle. And it was actually relatively hard to find, even when it was being printed, because it came out right at the end of the time that Decipher had the license. And so production of it was halted like at the very end of 2001. And whatever got printed, that was it. Nothing else was ever going to be made. And so some of the cards from Reflections 3 are unbelievably expensive these days. Thankfully, defensive shields are not as expensive. They're still relatively hard to find, but the Players Committee had done a good job of making virtual versions of them that you could put the slip of new game text in front of a common or uncommon rarity card that you already had plenty of. Turns out I didn't have as many of those as I wished I did, but I was able to make a few sets of those defensive shields to give out to our new player group, so that's good. And I want to give a big shout-out to Bill Pittman here in the Charlotte area that does a lot of work with the Players Committee, that he came to Carolina Tabletop Games in Pineville last Thursday and not only brought some copies of defensive shields to give to folks, but helped teach us all how they work, because putting those cards into play is its own separate little section of the game, basically. Almost a mini game from a side deck of cards. Somewhere Lando is salivating about Sabacc cards.
Which there is a defensive shield that limits your opponent to playing one Sabacc card per turn.
Yep.
So, yeah, I had figured out how they work from my testing on GIMP. And it was kind of trial and error, to be honest, because I copied those deck lists and they included defensive shields because they're competitive deck lists. These days, they're going to include those cards. And I kind of had to figure out, oh, it's telling me I can do something with this effect that I don't really know what does. Oh, I can put out one of these cards. Oh, that's how this works.
One of the nice things about Jump is that it has all of the rules built into the software. So the computer will prompt you when it's your turn to take an action, or it won't let you do something when that would be an illegal play.
Yeah. But, you know, I had not gone through and figured out what do all these defensive shields do. So I was just kind of putting out, that one looks good. That one looks good. That one looks good. I can read this, but I don't necessarily know what it really means. You know, right. But yeah. Okay. Yeah. It prevents my opponent from playing this, but what does this do? Like, I don't know what I'm stopping with this. So it was great that Bill could come out and kind of explain, okay, these are the defensive shields that are, you know, most generally useful. These are the ones that you want to use in certain matchups and that sort of thing. So that helped a lot with understanding what to do with those.
Yeah, it was great. And so we'll have a few more minutes of discussion here before we get done with this episode. But Nathan, now that you've gotten a better understanding of the game and especially the contemporary game, what types of decks are you playing and what are you hoping to build in the future?
All right. Well, I had built a couple of decks before I realized just how bad I was at the game. One of them was a Wookiee deck for the light side, which is a ton of fun, but not quite good. They need a few more cards or a few more interrupts or effects that do something a bit more. The Wookiees themselves have low destiny numbers, and you kind of need a lot of them because they're not all that powerful individually.
Weirdly,
because four power on one character as a non-unique seems like a lot, and it is a lot, but it's kind of all they do.
Power alone does not win this game.
Exactly. So I was able to catch some people unaware, the less experienced players, but anyone who knew what they were doing just played around them and would beat me. So it was fun. Going to play something else. For Dark Side, I was playing Court of the Vile Gangster. I know I've talked about that on this podcast before. I love feeding Jar Jar to the Rancor. I got to feed Luke Skywalker to the Rancor. She was not happy about that. Turn the tide of the game. because defensive shields would have stopped some of the shenanigans I was doing to feed people to the Rancor, or some of the benefits that I got from feeding people to the Rancor. And she was not using them. But now that we've got them in place, that deck's not as good either. So I'm looking forward to building some new decks. I've got one planned for the Dark Side that uses a new Darth Vader. But this Darth Vader is pre-mask Darth Vader. And yes, Scott is holding up Lord Maul, Darth Maul there. But that's not the Darth Maul that I plan to use.
But ironically, I have more copies of this like ultra rare alternate image thingy than I do of this, which is the card upon which you're hoping to put the Darth Maul virtual card. The picture of Darth Maul staring down the Sith probe droid is a pretty cool picture to use for his character card, but I only have one of these.
Well, I can probably survive with one in the deck, but I really want to have one.
Three of these.
Well, the whole point is to use all the prequel era Sith lords, so Sidious and Dooku and Maul and Vader pre-machinery, back when he was more man than machine. So that should be quite a bit of fun. And then for the light side, I'm going back and forth. I've got a few ideas. One of the decks that I copied was a Mind What You Have Learned deck, which is actually Leia doing Jedi training. On Dagobah with Yoda. And I've had quite a bit of fun playing that. And I actually tested it against my own Sith Lords deck and had a really close game. So that tells me that I'm kind of on the right track and upping the power on my decks, because the Sith Lord deck was going up against somebody else's Mind What You Have Learned deck, somebody who actually knew what they were doing. So glad to take some lessons from that. Scott, what have you been playing and what do you look forward to playing soon?
So old school wise, I played Hunt Down and Destroy the Jedi for Darkseid, which had several copies of Darth Vader with lightsaber to go around the galaxy and chop up Jedi. And when there are no Jedi on the light sides section of the table, you can make extra damage happen to them. Still a fun deck. There's a virtual version of Hunt Down and Destroy the Jedi card now that makes it even more powerful. So I may try to do a version of that. But my son Matthew loves Stormtroopers because Finn is his favorite character. And so there is a whole suite of cards you can use to do a First Order deck set in the sequel era that focuses on Kylo Ren trying to find the map to Luke Skywalker. So I think I'm going to try to build that deck because the cosplayer guy that they got for the image of Kylo Ren with lightsaber, and of course it's his crossblade, crossguard lightsaber. The cosplayer in that photograph is just immaculately spot on. It's one of the best pieces of Star Wars art I've seen in this game. So I can't wait to print that card out. And I believe that the card it goes in front of is something that I have several copies of. I'll have to double check on that. But I know that the stormtroopers for the First Order basically go on top of regular stormtroopers, and I've got a bajillion of those guys. So that would be really cool. For the light side, there is a new version of the Kessel Run that focuses on how it was happening in the Solo film. And so I really want to try a deck that tries to complete the Kessel Run, although the new version, naturally, is even harder than the original version. So I may just go back to doing the original Utini effect, Utini, than trying to do the new Millennium version. Get it? New Millennium? yeah, thank you very much. Anyway, but the newest version of Lando has a guy who's doing a great cosplay as well. Sorry, not the newest version. That would be General Lando from episode 9. The Solo version of Lando has a guy who's doing a really good cosplay of Lando as well. In fact, double checking that image, that might be a sculpture of like an action figure or something. I'll have to go back and look at that again. But it's really good artwork for that new character. So I'm interested in trying out a Kessel Run Solo deck for Lightside.
Very nice. There is a new Rescue the Princess objective, or a new version of the Rescue the Princess objective that lets you play Luke and Han as stormtroopers. And cool. Then, of course, Finn is also a stormtrooper, as is Jada, I believe her name is.
Jaina.
From episode 9. And there are actually some light side cards that deal with stormtroopers or Chewie. Because Chewie was in on that whole thing too.
Nice.
So, if Matthew wants to play a trooper deck, that might be a way to go for the light side.
He can do a light side one as well. Yeah.
Main characters, stormtroopers, no less.
Awesome. All right. Well, if you've stuck with us this long to hear us yammer on about gaming and Star Wars, we appreciate you. Derek is unfortunately not with us, but we're still going to do his favorite part of the show, and that is talk about what Star Wars t-shirts we are wearing this episode. Nathan, what Star Wars t-shirt do you have on?
I am wearing a Star Wars t-shirt that has a hazard sign on it, and it says, "Beware of Wookiee." I am wearing this shirt in honor of the fact that I love the Kashyyyk level on the Star Wars Lego Skywalker Saga, and also because of that Wookiee deck that I played recently with the CCG. I realized that not everyone was all that afraid of the Wookiee, but you know what one of the coolest parts of that deck is? I started the game with the Dejarik Hologlord on the table.
And you got to play a card titled Let the Wookiee Win.
Yes.
How cool is that? Yeah, that's
beautiful. Really cool. Yeah, so I really wanted to wear this Beware of Wookiee shirt for today's podcast, knowing that we were going to talk about those two subjects. Scott, what are you wearing today?
So I don't have quite as much of a thematic connection to both Star Wars CCG and Star Wars Lego as you did with your Wookiee shirt, but I do have a connection to some characters that I hope are available in Star Wars Lego, and that is the Bad Batch. I am wearing a black t-shirt with the four gentlemen from the Bad Batch arranged in their best homage to the epic Queen album cover, because back in the day, kids, we had record albums with large covers. You know what? I can't even say back in the day for that anymore. I went to a music shop the other day, and there's a bunch of LPs of modern music, contemporary music with big, broad album covers. It's great to see.
I got a record player right there, Scott.
Yeah. I don't get to be all, get off my lawn. But they're doing an homage to Queen, and so the four clones are arranged with their heads on a black background, and then, you know, the light casting across their faces, like the guys in Queen on that album cover. I'm hoping that the Bad Batch, if they aren't already unlockable characters in Star Wars Lego, that they will be as part of some downloadable content. The Mandalorian, Din Djarin, and Grogu, they're all already available for download. So, you know, there's all kinds of cool stuff.
There is a hidden characters section where you can put in codes and get unlock some characters. And I don't think we know all of the codes yet. There's about 15 or 20 that have been posted online at this point.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm sure there's more out there. A lot of those were holiday ones.
Cool. And also, I am hoping that we'll get some information about Bad Batch Season 2 next month at Star Wars Celebration in Anaheim. Definitely. So there you have it. If you guys want to get your own cool Star Wars What a Piece of Junk podcast t-shirt, please check out the Fandom Podcast Network store over on tpublic.com. And you can also find out more about all of our podcasts as part of the FPN on our master feed, which is at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Google Play. Please find us on Facebook in the What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast Facebook group that Derek moderates for us. You can email me between shows at whatapieceofjunkpod@gmail.com, or check us out on Twitter at WhatWars, and on Instagram, we are part of the Fandom Podcast Network. Nathan, please let folks know about those Apple Podcast reviews.
Oh, yeah. We love Apple Podcast reviews. Apple Podcast reviews help other people find our podcast, which is great. And we love to hear your feedback about what we're saying. Do you like our content? Do you want us to talk about other things? Feedback is a gift. And anything that you want to leave on an Apple Podcast review would be great. We particularly love 5-star reviews.
Yeah, we do.
Now, I have not figured out a way to get Chewbacca to tear anybody's limbs out in the Skywalker saga yet, but Wookiees are known to do that, and we really don't want to upset them. So 5-star reviews are the best.
Excellent. Yes. So once again, thanks everyone for listening to this episode. We really appreciate all of your feedback, and we appreciate you taking the time to join in our fandom with us. Please always remember to respect each other and always respect each other's fandom. All right, Nathan. Punch it.